Without any opposition, state lawmakers signed off on legislation during the final month of the scheduled legislative session that is designed to improve New York's efforts at preventing and investigating elder abuse, which has been on the rise in the last 15 months due to the social isolation caused by the pandemic. For more on the legislation and the issue of elder abuse more broadly, we're joined by Becky Prevey, Executive Director of the Association of Aging in New York, which represents local programs serving seniors in their community. Welcome back to the show, Becky.
Thanks for having me.
So in terms of elder abuse, what different forms can it take?
So elder abuse really takes a variety of different forms. And so they're actually put into categories, and we have specific ways to address each. So obviously there's physical abuse, which is non-accidental use of force, typically results in bodily injury, pain or impairment. Those types of things are like being slapped, burned, cut, or bruised. Then you have emotional abuse, which is really the willful infliction of mental or emotional anguish or threat, humiliating individuals, intimidating, making an individual feel frightened or isolated. Then we move into neglect. There's a couple different forms of neglect, including active neglect, which is when there's willful failure of a caregiver to fulfill their caregiving functions and responsibilities. This could include, you know, living arrangements, food, water, heat, clean clothes, and bedding. Then you move on to passive neglect, which we do see typically with caregiver breakdown issues, which is when there's a non-willful failure of a caregiver to fulfill caregiving functions. So this, you know, could take the form of two older individuals. One may have a cognitive disorder and the spouse isn't able to make sure that they are safely contained within the home, or they're not able to get the health and human services that they need in the home to provide appropriate care. And then there's also self-neglect, which is when an adult has an inability due to a physical or mental impairment to really do those tasks that are essential to caring for oneself. This could look like not providing essential food, clothing, shelter, medical care. So individuals that aren't able to access those services and are really unsafe in the community. And then we have the last piece, which is really the largest form that we see in the older population, which is financial exploitation. And that's really when you improperly use someone's funds, their property, other resources. This takes the shape of fraud, false pretenses, embezzlement, conspiracy, forgery, or coerced property transfers, and denial of access to an individual's assets. So those are really the main categories that we look at, and then really try and tailor the response to the specific item of neglect that we're working with.
And when it comes to the perpetrators of these willful examples of elder abuse, are these usually trusted people in the lives of seniors, whether it's a friend or family member or someone who's been hired to look after them?
They typically are someone that's close to an individual. So a lot of children, a lot of grandchildren, a lot of close family friends or trusted community members that may or may not be employed by the older person. It is typically something that hits close to home, and it's a trusted relationship, which is why there's such a significant underreporting. Obviously, if an older person has been financially exploited by a family member, that's very difficult to, number one, identify, number two, address, and number three, report. So it is typically by a close family member or friend.
I've read that the pandemic has caused a spike in elder abuse nationally. Have we seen those same trends in New York? And if so, why is that? And how do these manifest themselves?
So we've definitely seen an increase. Pre-pandemic, it's actually striking to know that almost 300,000 older New Yorkers are victims of some type of exploitation or neglect. Unfortunately, only one in 24 cases are typically reported. So we have a lot of work to do making reporting easier, making people feel empowered to do so. We also in New York have a very large older population. We have about 4.3 million individuals over the age of 60. And when you think about where individuals have finances, it's really the older population. So surprisingly, 83% of all wealth in the country is held by those 50 and over, which makes them an automatic target. They have, you know, steady income, Social Security, pensions. They're typically homeowners. They have available expendable income. And then when you add to that the issues with the pandemic, we lost the ability to really support some older New Yorkers because they then were in their homes. They weren't going to congregate sites. They weren't having contact with the outside world. And then we saw really an explosion of all these really intricate scams that targeted towards older people who were isolated and very alone, very afraid. We saw a variety of different scams, including, text messages from what appeared to be the Emergency Operations Center indicating an older person had been exposed to COVID-19 as a way to then get their personal information. So we think there were a variety of factors. When you look at caregivers and the stress that was placed throughout the pandemic, a lot of people were out of work. We saw alcohol and substance abuse really rise throughout the pandemic. And so combination of all of those things and then just generalized fear of what was happening with the pandemic really led to older people being targeted and being victims.
So the bill that passed the legislature has to do with the state's Elder Abuse Interventions and Enhanced Multidisciplinary Team Initiative. That's a mouthful, which is not new, but it's going to essentially have what? Its powers codified now? Can you walk us through what this bill does and also give us a little history on this team?
Sure. So the bill we're really, really excited about because it does exactly that. It codifies into law what has been happening across New York State for years and basically gives that power and control under New York State Office for the Aging to really make sure there's a coordinated statewide effort. To give you some history on the EMDT function and how they came to fruition, there's really two statewide leaders in New York. So Lifespan of Greater Rochester actually covers the upstate region, and then the New York City Elder Abuse Center covers the more urban area downstate. And really what these two leaders do is they worked with 50 counties to stand up enhanced multidisciplinary teams for elder abuse and neglect. What these teams do is instead of just this becoming an aging issue or an adult protective services issue, this actually brings together a variety of partners to make sure that we're addressing these issues holistically and that we are working together to make sure that where possible, we're able to prosecute cases and or get restitution. A team typically consists of a coordinator and then really a variety of wraparound services from the community. And so that would take the form of law enforcement, local primary care physicians, forensic accountants, the district attorney's office, and other community partners to really make sure when we have complex cases that we're able to make sure we're all working towards the same goals, which is to, have a positive outcome. These teams also work really diligently to provide education and outreach. Again, with only 1 in 24 cases being reported, it's really important that we get the word out. If you see something, to say something, that these cases are reported, and then the teams are able to work with the victim, work with the families, and, really have a much more positive outcome than one individual trying to handle these cases individually.
Well, in terms of that issue of reporting, if people suspect that elder abuse might be occurring, what are some signs and who should they contact?
So everyone really needs to be cognizant of the fact that if something seems awry, then potentially it could be. And a lot of people that we receive reports from are community members that know an individual. It might be a financial institution that notices unusual behavior when someone's going to the bank or some unusual activity on the account. It could also be in primary care physicians' offices setting where they could see someone may feel fearful, may not be able to talk on their own behalf. And then people in the community who check on neighbors or friends, and they may see unusual behavior. They might see unusual traffic in and out of a home. With the narcotic issue that we see, most older people do take medications. Again, this makes them an easy target. And really just to make sure that you're looking out for one another, that you're checking in on older people. And if you do see something that doesn't sit right or you think there might be something going on, then it needs to be reported. In New York State, we actually have a toll-free number. That's 844-697-3505. And you can call that to make a report. You are able to do so anonymously. And then the proper individuals would then investigate those allegations to see if there needed to be an intervention.
Well, we've been speaking with Becky Prevey. She's the executive director of the Association on Aging in New York. Becky, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by Destiny USA. Shopping, dining, and entertainment all in one location. For more information, go to www.destinyusa.com.